Buenas noches, good evening. You're listening to Chiapas No Se Olvida, Radio Zapatista. We're transmitting live from the studios in Berkeley, California, the otra califas del otro lado. And I'm here in the studio, I'm Daniel, and I'm here with Tyler from the collective. And we wanted to give a shout out to Mr. Chooch on the controls before we get started with everything.
Yeah, so tonight's show is going to cover a few things, and we're going to start off with the show from with some noticias from Chiapas, or some news from Chiapas, and then we're going to actually take a listen to an audio from the recent Women's Encuentro in Chiapas that happened March 7th and 8th. And then lastly, we're going to carry up the discussion around, I would say, the war on public education and pay tribute to the Pink Friday. And we're going to actually be looking at the privatization of public schools and how they're affecting specifically low-income and communities of color.
The idea is that we're going to be approaching this topic. There's been a lot of coverage today, as we were just listening to the two Pedros talk about it and Gavilan on earlier shows and on Off the Chain talking about the war on public education. But tonight, what we're trying to do in Radio Zapatista is look at the issue from a Zapatista perspective. That is, desde abajo y a la izquierda, from below and to the left, and see what people are doing on the ground to organize against that. So part of the show is going to be an interview with a organizer in Los Angeles named Maria Martinez, who works with an organization that's called the Tri-National Coalition in Defense of Public Education. And we're going to be talking to her to see what kinds of things they're doing to combat this war. So let's go to a quick musical break, and we'll be back with the news from Chiapas.
Are you ready to begin?
All right, news from Chiapas. I'm going to just talk about 3 points because we don't have too much time here. The first point, we've mentioned several times on the show that at the beginning of January, end of December, beginning of January, there was an encuentro, an encounter in Chiapas and in Mexico City called the Encuentro de Digna Rabia, the Encounter of Dignified Rage. And we've talked about that a lot on the show, but what I want to point out is something that happened while the Digna Rabia encounter was going on. There was there's aggression that's going on in sort of indigenous, the Zapatista communities in Chiapas pretty much all the time. But what we're seeing is a new sort of group has arisen that's starting to confront these organizations, the Zapatista organizations. And this group is called the ORCAO. It's the Organización Regional de Caficultores de Ocosingo. That is the regional organization of coffee growers from Ocosingo, which is a municipality in Chiapas. They're linked with the PRD. So it's something that we've seen in the past, which is the Zapatistas have been struggled against from not only from the political right, but also the political left. The political parties on the left supposedly are organizing against the Zapatistas. And that's one of the things that we might be talking about a little bit later in the United States, potentially, you know, what Obama will have to say for public education. So the people from the ORCAO, what they've been doing is invading Zapatista lands and cutting fences, letting cattle, for example, roam free, and then attacking the cattle, including to the point that they've also been attacking the Zapatista compañeros. So there have been these kinds of encounters, and one of these particular encounters took place during the Digna Rabia encounter in such a way as to make create this idea that it was a big event that they were trying to make it into a sort of spectacle because there were so many people looking at what was going on in Chiapas at that time. They wanted to paint themselves as the victims, and they claimed that the Zapatistas had in fact attacked them. So this is something that we're going to be keeping our eyes on more in the future, the aggressions from the ORCAO. Number two is we talked about the Digna Rabia Encuentro. There was another encuentro that just happened on March 7th and 8th, which is the political, sporting, cultural, and artistic event dedicated to Mama Corral, who was a person who the Zapatistas met in their trajectory throughout Mexico during the other campaign. And this was a sporting event in part and an artistic and cultural event. So there were three sports that were played, basketball, volleyball, and soccer. And the biggest part about this was that only women could take part. Men could take part only by cooking, taking care of children, cleaning, or working to support the event. So we have an audio from one of the people who was participating in the event, a little girl named Lupita. So I want to listen to just very briefly to this audio, and then we'll bring it back.
Buenas tardes, compañeras y compañeros, niños y niñas de todos los caracoles y países del mundo. Voy a leer un pequeño mensaje.
Unfortunately, we didn't have time to translate what she's saying, but I mean, one of the things that we wanted to sort of focus on here is that even children participate in the politics, the everyday politics of life in the Zapatista community, and we wanted to sort of signal this as sort of the foundation of a learning community. Encuentros or encounters are places where people come together from all over the world to participate together and share and listen and have patience with each other about organizing and political strategies. And even it's very striking that the children can participate in that. And I think that's very and a very important thing to signal when we're talking about education and children, you know, and children's rights in the United States today. So that could be something that we keep in mind as we move on to talk about public education in the U.S.
And one other thing that I think should be mentioned is kind of how far the Zapatistas have come and kind of looking at their internal conflicts, specifically with the representation of women. I mean, it's not so often that you have international encuentro that is completely organized and run and for particularly indigenous women. So I think that's, again, what to reference what Dan was saying, that it's pretty impressive, and I think it's an inspiration to look at to see how we can bring some of their own practices here and look at how they've organized themselves and look at how we can organize ourselves here locally, specifically in the Bay Area.
Okay, third point is that we just wanted to give a quick shout-out that there were five political prisoners that were released from jail in Mexico who were associated with the Zapatista movement. They've been released from the jail called they're part of an organization in this jail called La Voz del Amate. The Amate is the prison, and five people have been released. So this doesn't change the fact that there's still injustices in the prison, in the prison industrial complex in Mexico, and in the legal system. In fact, it just proves that, because one of the reasons that these people were released were because of these huge irregularities in the legal processes, including fabricated evidence and stuff like that. So there's been a lot of great coverage of this in La Jornada by Herman Bellinghausen. If you check on the La Jornada's website, you can find out more information. So now we're going to go to a quick music break and come back to talk about the war on public education in the United States.
So to start off the discussion around the war and public education, I just wanted to kind of lay out a context of what many of us as educators know of, but just to kind of go into it for our listeners. So we find ourselves in the ninth year of No Child Left Behind. And since the beginning of No Child Left Behind, we found that accountability laden by the federal government has actually caused a lot of schools to close, actually leaving many children behind. So all over the Bay Area, specifically in Oakland and Richmond, we're finding schools actually having de-enrollment from other charter schools arising because of certain schools not meeting the academic yearly index, or the API, meaning the proficiency of math and reading skills of their students. So in that sense, we also find about 25,000 teachers in California today receive pink slips, meaning temporary layoff notices. And so what we find is that the federal government is approaching this through a privatization mentality, meaning that they actually want to take private companies and have private companies actually fund schools. So we're about to get on the phone with Maria Martinez, and we're going to kind of be looking at the issues around how can we actually challenge the privatization of schools by private companies.
Right, like Tyler mentioned, we're talking with Maria Martinez. She's, as I mentioned before, she participates in the Tri-National Coalition in Defense of Public Education. She also writes for a newspaper called the Tribuno del Pueblo. You can check that out online at tribunodelpueblo.org. And she teaches history at a community college. So, Maria, are you on the air? Can you hear us?
I am.
Great. So we wanted to start off the discussion with just to ask you briefly, you know, what are you seeing on the ground? What is the sort of war on public education, which is what we've been talking about tonight? What does that look like on the ground in L.A.?
Well, I think a lot of what was said earlier is describing a phenomena that is not only statewide but national. I actually am also a parent, and my child's school was closed. We actually live in Pasadena, just a little bit north of Los Angeles, and four schools here in Pasadena were closed about 18 months ago. And so the same idea, in fact, my child's school was reopened as a charter school. And so, and this particular site had just spent $3 million in bond money upgrading the school. It had a relatively higher API score than other schools, and they closed it anyways. And the process by which they did this is they're really pitting schools against each other. They came out with this process of which school should we close, and had each school say, no, don't close my school, close their school. And it was this really horrible process where they were pitting communities against each other. And eventually, we figured that out, and we kind of stood together and said that no schools should be closed. But given the state crisis, we could not save our schools, these particular four schools. So, you were talking about privatization, and the question earlier was about, how do we fight privatization? And I think before we answer how we fight privatization, we need to really describe what are the methods for privatizing. And privatization is not just happening to education. We're finding that the same scenario is being applied by governments to other public services, and it's a very similar scenario. They underfund public services, they create an uproar and declare a crisis, and then they claim that privatization or the private sector or corporation can do a better job. So they deregulate and break public control, and they divert public money to corporations and then raise prices. When you look at education, this particular process is being one of the ways they're declaring schools a failure. That's really the function of No Child Left Behind and this testing mania. No Child Left Behind judges a school with one test in the entire year. That's their one chance to prove that, they're a good school, this arbitrary, horrible measurement tool. And so No Child Left Behind is forcing testing on schools. It's forcing standardization, which is doing away with any kind of creative learning. And testing is actually an important way that corporations are encroaching on public education, because it's corporations that develop the tests. It's corporations that administer the test. They provide all the reading materials. And through this kind of backhanded way, we have, even in public schools, corporations are often dictating the curriculum through this kind of standardized testing model that has been the cornerstone of No Child Left Behind.
So one of the things that you'd mentioned earlier is that, I mean, as I think part of this, the Tri-National Coalition, you guys had been sort of boycotting some of the standardized testing. I mean, we were wondering sort of what, I mean, you mentioned standardized testing as a, that's sort of a big front on the, in the privatization efforts by the government. But what, so in addition to like boycotting standardized tests, what other kinds of things can people do organizing? I mean, if people are getting together finally in three different school districts and saying, no, we don't want any of the schools to be closed, but they're not being listened to, I mean, what other kinds of strategies are there?
UTLA, the United Teachers Los Angeles, there's some teachers there that are boycotting some periodic assessments and some open court assessments. And so I guess we're really kind of at the beginning here. We're beginning to understand. We can see how privatization is unfolding on the ground. But I think that the real value of the Tri-National and even the Tribuna del Pueblo, the newspaper that is trying to really get us to engage in dialogue about what we're experiencing, is to also gain a kind of understanding of why is it happening, how is it happening. For instance, charter schools are another type of encroachment that is taking place. And so the Tri-National has just created a website where we encourage all parents and teachers and education activists to not only come and check out what the different fronts of struggle, how they're developing around the state and around the country, but to actually post your experiences and your assessments, and really to begin to really unite around the opportunities that this period presents. And so I'd like to share with your listeners two websites that that we can use.
Please.
For this. It's www.trinational-us.org and the Tribuno del Pueblo, www.tribunodelpueblo.org, are places, are forums where we can start to discuss how it's happening and what are some of the responses. In Los Angeles, we're having a teach-in in April in the harbor area, which is like the San Pedro, the south part of Los Angeles, where parents and teachers are coming to discuss this charter school and testing and how they are really going to shortchange our students in the long run. So those are some of the things that the Tri-National and the Tribuno del Pueblo has opened up its pages also to the struggles around public education.
You know, it's really great that you're talking about this, because I'm actually an educator myself here in the Bay Area, and our school is under performance improvement, which for our listeners is kind of what happens to the school once it doesn't meet the standards of the federal government, the federal government standards. And I was wanting to ask you if you could talk a little bit about how you approach getting parents like yourself and teachers in the community involved and supporting your efforts to actually boycott some of the standardized tests. Because right now we're having a little bit of trouble actually getting some parents' involvement and getting them out. So did you all hold forums, or did you hold town hall meetings? And if you could talk a little bit about your strategies to get the community and the parents involved.
Sure. I mean, I think everybody is very disappointed with the way the schools are performing. I think everyone is really afraid that our kids are not going to get the education that they need to compete in today's global high-tech economy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that we are starting to see and kind of question, particularly with this kind of economic meltdown, you know, start to wonder, how is it that privatizing schools is going to be better? Like I said, when you underfund schools and you set them up to fail, parents are rightly outraged and easily led to the, you know, it is an alluring idea of a charter school that, you know, they say is more autonomous, it's smaller, you know, that you can really thrive. In fact, charter schools are set up to do what they claim that they are free to offer, an exciting, creative curriculum for children, something that public schools are not really permitted to do. And so I think parents are starting to engage and really confront the idea of testing. And I think whenever you have teachers that are open to that discussion, and you have more and more examples, I think the Trinational has really helped us in that respect, because we actually, the first Trinational conference that I attended was in Oaxaca. And that was, you know, 2 months before the Oaxacan teachers took over, right, there. The whole city of Oaxaca.
Back in 2006, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that conference was so impacting to the U.S., the handful of U.S. teachers, that they committed to have the next conference in Los Angeles, which took place last year. And so I think our connection and our looking at the Mexican example and the Canadian examples have really inspired education activists and teachers and parents like myself. And one of the things that we found, as overwhelming and as powerful as the corporations are, it only takes a handful of clear, dedicated people that can really, you know, describe the problem for what it is, you know, and describe its origin and describe that what they're chipping away at is the idea that everyone deserves a quality education. And that's what this country is built on. You know, we're not just talking about don't cut us 20%, just cut us 10%. We're looking at an opportunity to create schools in a way that they should have done, you know, 100 years ago. And I think people, I think that's resonating with people. And I think it's part of this, you know, economic and social decline that we're witnessing that is having a small group of parents and educators say, well, maybe this is an opportunity to set things right.
Well, thank you very much for your words and your thoughts on this very complex issue. I think you've really laid out very, in very simple terms, sort of the contours of this, like, massive effort that's being calculated by, in from many different directions, corporations and governments and sort of right-wing or neoliberal, the neoliberal agenda in the government, in order to starve the beast and starve public education, and thus, by doing that, sort of bring in the corporation. So I think you've done a really good job in laying that out. Do you want to just say the websites that you mentioned earlier one more time?
Absolutely. For the newspaper, it's called tribunodelpueblo.org, www.tribunodelpueblo.org. And for the Trinational, it's www.trinational-us.org. And both of those sites welcome postings. You know, they're not just for you to come and read our stuff, or but for people to really engage and comment and build this thing.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Maria.
Okay, thank you.
Haven't you learned anything?
My last school was a joke. Same people who control the school system control the prison system and the whole social system ever since slavery. I went to school with some redneck crackers. Right around the time Third Base dropped the Cactus album, but I was reading Malcolm. I changed my name in 89, clean.
cleanest parts of my brain, like a baby nine. I took a history class serious, front row, every day of the week, third period. And what up your teachers had, calling them racist. I try to show them crackers some light, they couldn't face it. I got my diploma from a school called Rickers, full of teenage mothers and drug dealing niggas in the hallways. The popo was always present, searching through niggas' possessions, looking for dope and weapons, get your lessons. That's what my moms kept stressing. I tried to pay attention, but their classes weren't interesting. They seemed to only glorify the Europeans, claiming Africans were only three-fifths of human beings. They schools can't teach us ish. My people need freedom. We're trying to get all the...
We're back, and you're listening to Radio Zapatista, and we just got off the phone with an educator, history educator down in L.A., and Maria brought up some interesting points, specifically with what her group, the Tri-National Coalition in Defense of Public Land, is doing. And she mentioned that she set up an actual encounter, or a space of encounter, on the actual website. And if we take the Zapatista perspective of this, of actually setting up an encounter, I think the Tri-National Coalition in Defense of Public Education is actually trying to set up, from what it seems, a way that we can actually see each other, learn from each other, and hear how we can actually confront such a large, large issue and war on public education. I think that it's important that we look at this, because it brings in the discussion of actually what is a learning community and what the actual education system, if you will, has the potential of being.
It's interesting because we're talking about learning communities in classrooms, but it's also possible to talk about learning communities in encuentros. We mentioned that before. And it's also possible to talk about sort of the Zapatista movement as a whole, as a learning community. They talk about walking and learning and listening. I think, and we've said this before on the program, that one of the most radical things the Zapatistas ever did was to stop and listen. And, you know, be open to learning and hearing other perspectives. And so if you think about the political possibilities of learning and being open and facilitating discussions and encounter with people, whether it's online or whether it's face-to-face or whatever, I think that can be really powerful.
Great. Well, I think that's the end of our show. So with that, we'd like to continue this discussion. And if you would like to email us, our website is www.radiozapatista.org, or you can email us at www.radiozapatista.org.
It's radiozapatista@gmail.com.
My bad.
It's okay. And check out our website for more updates. There's a lot of information about the repression that's going on in Chiapas, the repression in Oaxaca that happened in 2006 that Maria was mentioning, and we'll have, you know, this program up on the web. So check it out and tune in to our show next month.